Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Walter Dean on the show called Getting It Done. Black people and some white people have been involved with trying to make things better in this country because of the experiences that black people were having. Let's listen to Robert Culp, the television and movie star, explain what was observed going all the way back to 1969. Here is Robert Culp.
This ever change to this? Where does this kind of hatred begin? Hate is learned in the most unexpected ways.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Catch a nigger by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
So little Black Sambo didn't know what to do. He just couldn't think fast enough.
Will you look at that coon just creeping along? Them spooks are as slow as molasses.
And these are some of the more subtle ways that can make this turn to this. Of course, most white people don't really learn to hate that much. But because of the subtle things that start in childhood, a lot of white people are more prejudiced about Negroes than they think they are. For example, how many black people are there in your circle of friends? Are you comfortable with black people?
And they're crowded today, isn't it?
Sure is. They don't usually have so many people here,
Yeah, they're usually out of the courtyard.
It's windy today, so I guess everybody's inside.
Are you afraid of black people? Do you think they are capable of great violence? Does an interracial couple dancing make you get uptight? Do you compete harder because you don't want to be beaten by a black team? Or do you play easier and feel sorry for them because you think they're inferior to you? Do you have as close a friendship with a Negro as you have with your white friend? Do you feel that there is something different about black people, much more than just the color of their skin? Do you think of Negroes as a group, or do you like or dislike them as individuals, as you would a white kid? What would be your reaction to this blood transfusion? For yourself. Would you go to a black dentist? A black doctor?
Where is the pain?
Right here in my head.
That's it, please. That's our checklist of hidden prejudices. How'd you make out? Oh, by the way, have you ever said,
them states, they all have rhythm.
They sure do.
They're great fighters, but they can't take a punch in the belly.
You know, some of like us friends are Negroes.
Oh, really? It's interesting to note that those last three comments are still being made by people who feel no animosity toward Negroes. They would be shocked to discover that they're feeling that there's something different about black people beyond the color of their skin would be considered as prejudice by one of their best friends who happens to be black. Not all prejudices masquerade as kindness, tolerance. There are many prejudices that come out of a personal hang-up, a dislike or contempt for black people that can no longer be swept under the rug of indifference.
I sure don't want any of them for neighbors. They're dirty and they're scary. Besides, my mother and father say the value of our house will go down. They'll ruin the neighborhood.
If I went to a school I once wanted, I'd leave, buddy. I'd leave.
Yes, sir.
Gee, Dad.
Now, just a minute. Look,
but Dad.
Look, son, I'm telling you, they have no ambition. Other minority groups have broken through. This is America. If they had anything on the ball, they could make it. If they don't, it's their own fault. No one ever gave me anything. I made it because I deprived myself of everything until I was successful.
Honey, I just don't see how you can feel like
all
that.
All right, I admit it. They were great, but I still don't like them. I still say colored people's skin is different. It's dirty and it smells.
Oh, Stacy.
I want freedom. I want freedom.
God wanted them white, he would have made them white. I don't see why they have to make such a big fuss about everything. They don't like it here. Why don't they go back to Africa where they came from?
You don't understand. Don't tell me they're not lazy. All they want to do is to get onto welfare and make money for doing nothing.
I'll tell you why they're rioting. Because it's too lazy to work and pay for the things that I have to work and pay for.
Incidentally, I can't tell you what to hunt with your own gun. I just sell them. But I can tell you, I got three of them staged in my house, and I can't wait for them coons to try and ride around here. Right?
Right. You think they were kidding when they said burn, baby, burn?
No, baby, they weren't kidding when they said burn, baby, burn. And that's at least one good reason we all better get straight on where it's really at while we still have time.
Don't tell me they're not lazy.
Sure they're lazy, Negro. Just like they're lazy white. Or yellow skin, or brown skin, or even polka dot people. But it's not too hard to see why someone working on a job who doesn't feel that he's going to get the same advancement as a white guy doing the same job wouldn't try and work too hard. It's just that he's been discouraged in advance.
They have no ambition.
Ambition? Let me tell you about ambition. Every graduation assembly speaker says you have to start your way at the bottom of the ladder and work your way up. But they're mighty quiet about a black man in the same ladder. The black man knows that when he starts out at the bottom of the ladder, 99 out of 100 times, it's going to be the best he can do. His white boss, who is certainly never learning, is going to look the white guy anyway. How many times have you seen a black person in charge of whites? Not very often. Well, we black men know that merit doesn't necessarily count for us, even though we're ambitious enough to knock ourselves out working at night, going to high rent college.
If I went to a school where I wasn't wanted, I'd leave, buddy. I'd leave.
If I had no pride, I'd do whatever was expected of me. The reason why I want to go where I want is because it's my right. I don't want to go where I'm not wanted socially, which means you're home if I'm not invited. But I do want to go to a school where white kids go to because they're much better equipped and they have teachers who went to better schools than most black teachers were able to get into. There's only one income tax form for the black and white people. So I see no honest and fair reason why I can't be allowed to get an equal education like the white kids get. There's already been one revolution because of taxation without representation, and I don't see any difference now. The Constitution guarantees me an equal education, and I want one so I can get an equal living when I graduate.
Colored people's skin is different. It's dirty and it smells.
As a physician who has worked as a skin specialist for more than 30 years, I have had ample time to compare the skin of white and Negro patients. Apart from the greater abundance of the pigment called melanin in the skin of Negroes, there is no basic cellular difference and no scientific reason why white skin should smell any differently than dark. As far as skin odors go, it's my personal opinion that it's all a matter of hygiene. 5 minutes, 5 days after a bath, we all smell the same. And also, the skin of all so-called white people has this same pigment factor in it. The only time anyone's skin is truly white is when pigment is not formed at all, as in the albino. Incidentally, albinos may be born to Negro parents.
If they don't like it here, why don't they go back to Africa where they came from?
Americans. If we were born here, we belong here, right? We belong here just as much as the Caucasians. Now, if everybody went back to where they came from, all that would be left would be the Indians. And the white Americans didn't give them a fair shake either. So somebody tell me, where are they going to send all them Indians? They'll ruin the neighborhood. Ever been in the home of a black American family? Come on in. Living room or parlor. Kitchen. And dining area. My parents' bedroom. Mine's kind of messy. Bathroom, of course. Backyard. Garage. It's really about the same as any other home when the father makes about $10,000 to $12,000 a year. It takes the usual amount of cleaning, washing, dusting, waxing, sprinkling, mowing, and little repairs to keep it that way. Unfortunately, most homes in the black community don't have husbands and fathers or enough income for the mothers to stay home and take care of them. So obviously their homes won't look as good as this one. Also, when some people feel that life is too much for them, they get discouraged and give up on taking care of things, especially when rats and roaches and crumbling walls and ceilings are the best the majority of black families can afford.
Black Americans are expected to overcome the discouragement and humiliation of white racism outside the ghetto. They are also expected to rise above the dead-end poverty and hopelessness of life in the ghetto. From the very beginning, from the day a black child is born, the odds against it are much greater than they are against a white child. In the first year of life, three times as many black children die as white. The odds against the normal birth and survival of the black baby frequently begin with a working pregnant mother and continue through childhood with a lack of proper nourishment and medical care. The average white family's income buys medical care, which is usually much better than a trip to the public clinic for the average black baby. Not only is there a difference in medical care, but in what is considered typical nourishment for most white children.
Wonderful parents, all the vitamins. How's that? You like that for us?
This difference in nourishment has existed for generations and still exists for millions of hungry and undernourished black children of all ages, the same as it does for the white children who are victims of the same kind of poverty. In this home, there isn't enough extra food to feed a cat. So this child will grow up without experiencing the simple pleasure of having a pet, without things to see and hear, without the toys most kids have, which actually stimulate mental growth. The barren world most ghetto children see gives them a handicap in school that they may never overcome.
A
handicap they may carry outside of school with them for the rest of their lives.
Kathy?
Lord Fairfax owned several million acres of land in Virginia and employed George Washington to survey the land.
The game is familiar. Most of us have played it. But probably not in this kind of playground. One of the worst problems of ghetto life is the lack of parks or recreational facilities. It doesn't take too long before these games are played for real, with goals frequently based on examples of borderline and illegal characters having the most money and status in the neighborhood. Inside or outside the ghetto, there are many ways for black children to learn at the early age of 3 or 4 that there is something very bad and different about being black.
Come away from her!
When this kind of prejudice is directed against you throughout your entire life, it can create a feeling of self-hate and of being an unwanted and unrespected subhuman, which is to say the very least, capable of turning into hatred directed toward all white people.
Well, you got yourself some golden french fries now, don't you?
Yeah, can I have one of your fries, huh?
How come you don't look like me? I asked you a question, Chili Lips Empty.
Hey, you gonna start a fire, man?
Aw.
What's the matter with this?
First of all, we're going to draw this line to find... Turn around. Now be quiet. Turn around. Just turn around in your chair.
Frequently in the black ghetto schools, the teacher represents the white world of authority and is unable to reach the black child with much success. For the black as well as the white teacher, one of the biggest problems is discipline rather than teaching.
Are you doing this on your paper or on someone else's paper?
In some dilapidated and overcrowded ghetto schools, there aren't even enough textbooks to go around. Many of these deprived students who plan to go on to higher education find that they cannot meet entrance requirements of most colleges. A visit to the stores of his ghetto is further discouragement and shows him that as far as a job or a business career is concerned, most of the business establishments are run by whites. With black people doing the same low-skilled jobs they are hired to do in the white section of town. What little money is brought into the ghetto from people working outside doesn't stay there to circulate and build the community. The white businessmen take it to their communities. And the small Negro middle class of doctors, dentists, small businessmen often live outside the ghetto and also do their shopping in the better stocked stores outside the ghetto. However, there are comparatively few black middle-class businessmen. Because it's much more difficult for a black man to get money to start a business than for a white man with the same job and business background.
Your name is Lottie Richardson.
There are many black families who have discovered they can get more money on welfare than on the jobs available to them. To the unemployed and underemployed ghetto families, welfare becomes the only answer to their economic problems. To most black families, the welfare worker is regarded as another representative of the white world outside the ghetto. As someone strange who doesn't begin to understand their problems, and is far more concerned with rules than with people. In many states, an unemployed male head of the family cannot live at home if the family is getting welfare. If he has a job that pays less than his family needs, he will not get the difference in money from welfare. Therefore, many homes have absentee fathers who are forced to leave because this is the only way their family can have enough money to live. This creates a home without a man, a home without a father, a home where the mother has to manage without the husband. In time, this makes the absent husband already hurt and discouraged stay away altogether, and produces another victim of what he feels are white society's rules and regulations regarding poor black people. That the ghettos have erupted in riots comes as no great surprise to black Americans inside or outside the ghetto. These riots, called rebellions by many black people, have forced many basic issues up to the surface for all Americans to face, especially the issue of violence.
And I tell you, what this country needs is law and order.
What this country needs even more than law and order is justice. And if it will take violence to get that justice, we're ready for this too. From slavery, emancipation, reconstruction, and suppression, the lives and the history of the Negro have been dominated by violence for the thriller. There have been nearly 4,000 lynchings in 1889, also street murders, Klan flogging, home and churches burned, and bombing that went unpunished, with very little help from the white government or its courts about law and order or the police to protect the black people. And there's another type of violence, a violence to the heart and to the mind of the Negro. So why the big surprise when he's ready to be violent against those who've been violent against him? I think it's remarkable that he's refrained from violence all his time up to now.
I'm tired of the Negroes being accused
Listen, why do you make all the rules? It is dinner set for all the ages. I'm just getting back one tiny bit of whipping out of my great grandparents. Why do you owe those who feel to getting a million rounds?
If you study Negro history, you know that in 1863, after President Lincoln drafted men from New York City, hundreds of white men were so angry that they rioted. They went through the Negro part of town ransacking, yes, looting and burning buildings. Hundreds of black men, women, and children were shot and beaten to death or hanged from trees and lampposts. There hasn't been much mention about this in history books, has there?
Yeah, man, we're uptight. We're ready to burn it all down or blow it up, if that's what it takes. And ourselves with it. We've had it with Whitey. We want ours now.
And what does Whitey have to say about violence, rioting, and looting?
Okay, so they've got it right. But I say these riots are about juvenile delinquents so they could loot.
Honey, the only way to stop riots is to kill anybody who loots or throws a Molotov cocktail. For after all, you can't have a country without law and order.
As long as they're right in their own neighborhoods, I couldn't care less. But they better not come to the white part of town, because if they do, they've had it. My father's got a gun, my friends have got guns, and we'll stop right in their tracks.
And on the other hand?
You know, this may sound strange coming from a white guy, but I don't think we've got any right to complain about their fighting back. After a while, anybody'd fight back. But I don't like to see all that rioting. It can only lead to needless killing, government restrictions, even a state of emergency, with the government canceling elections and all that. Besides, I think they have better answers than rioting.
But how long can you expect Negroes to see how great it is to live in America on their television sets and in the movies without them seeing how different their own lives are?
The thing that bothers me about this whole situation is there are so many Negroes that hate the white people. That's not right. It's just as wrong as the white people hate the Negroes. There are so many white people who are really trying to help them. Why they've given up jobs and why they've been beaten up and some of them even killed because they work in the civil rights movement. Everybody's always yakking about fair play in sports. But how about fair play where it counts a little more, like being treated the same as everybody else? I think if I were a Negro, I'd blow my cork and fight for my self-respect too.
Not only are many black Americans ready to fight for what they feel is rightfully theirs, but unlike ever before, they are proud of their identity as black people. This can be seen in a great outpouring of art and literature as never before. As a group who feels they have not been represented fairly in the history of the United States, and as a direct response to a deeply felt rejection by so much of white America, many black people are turning to Africa for their cultural, folk, and historical roots. Hairstyles of boys and girls, men and women are proudly African, as is much of the clothing. Swahili and other African languages have been requested by the black community and are being taught in junior high, high school, and college. Music is black. Dance is black. Theater is pridefully black or African. In a new attitude of identifying with a pre-slavery black culture. But there are those who feel that the American Negro has a great deal to be proud about.
You know, I did a little African look. I think it's a group, but I'm American, and I'm proud of it. Because one thing, we as black people have a lot we could be proud of, that we contribute to this country that you don't read about in the white history books, you understand? But one thing you know for sure, and that's that music, that sweet soul music. Everybody tried to imitate us because they know where it's at. They know what's happening. We know they know we got soul, you understand? Even the Beatles started out that way. Can you dig it?
Not only is history being questioned,
but what has been taught about religion, too.
Hey, what about the story of Christ? We always see him as blonde and blue-eyed. If he came from where he did with his parents and ancestors, he should have dark hair and black eyes. Hey, do you mean to tell me that there are only white blue-eyed angels in heaven? That with all those nice dark skin brothers and sisters died all these years, there's been these one little black angel. Anyway,
yes, an angel who catches always white, and these devils who catches black.
Yeah. How come everything that's black is bad? Yeah. Like funerals, black cats, which is always be wearing black.
Right.
In the movies, bad guys be riding on their black horses, and the good guys be riding on their white horses.
Yeah. How come white mice are nice, and nobody ever sells black lions or black bunny rabbits? Hey, that's a stupid
question. Some of that may sound like they're kidding, but are they? How do you think you change it? Or even new attitudes about old words like Negro, colored, black.
Please don't call me a Negro. That's the white man's word. And don't call me colored either. Better call me black. Because that's what I am. I'm a black man.
Another big change is something called black power. A phrase much misunderstood. Basically, black power calls for a bigger share of the power in the politics and economics of America, or black Americans. Black power also calls for self-help without white leadership in black civil rights and political organizations, as well as in all government training and business aid programs for black people. To some black people, self-help organizations are no answer to the hatred that they feel for white people. They want absolutely no personal or organizational involvement with white people at all.
All right, I'll tell you what I think about it. Every time I see Whitey in the black movement, I'm going to tell him to leave. I don't need him or his help. And any other black man with pride would tell you the same thing.
Look, we've held back the way we've felt for 300 years, and I'm not doing it anymore. I won't lie to you. I wouldn't go from here to there to save the life of any honky I know.
There are millions of Afro-Americans like me, and all we really want is to take over the state so we have the majority and keep it for blacks only. Put a great big sign saying, no whites allowed.
There's a lot of bright black people coming out of the schools all of the time, and we'll build our own businesses, and we'll run them, and we'll elect our own black politicians, and they'll take care of us.
Man, I don't want to hear no more of that mess about what the white man is doing for me. I mean, my people have spent hundreds of years listening and trusting the white man. And the only reason he's doing anything at all is because we made it. Yeah, we made it.
The black community is not in agreement on the issue of whitey and violence, be it in the form of rioting or just plain personal hatred. Many feel that black racism is as bad as white racism, and that the problem is far too serious to be solved by separating black and white Americans any longer.
Hating white is just as bad as hating black. Hating anyone from the color of their skin is just as sick.
I think the basic problems will never be solved by rioting. I'm sure the government has gotten the message by now. If we go too far, the government will have to do its thing. They'll have to side with the law and order people. It's the only way they can go. What we should do is keep after the government all the time until we get what the Constitution says is rightfully ours.
I think that only the extremists want to make a black world for themselves. I believe that most black people feel that not only can things be worked out together, but that they must be very soon before terrible things happen to black and white Americans.
Well, just how will all Americans respond, black and white? Will it be in time to prevent what government agencies feel to be the greatest national emergency facing this country since the Civil War? This problem is too old and too complicated for easy, happy answers. Here is an example of what black and white parents and students have worked out together with a cooperative school system. In Los Angeles, students who volunteer for Project APEX, an educational enrichment program, attend courses which are taught in schools other than their own. This automatically brings together children of all races in these special classes where they share the same academic and cultural interests and are able to meet and work on problems together. For many, it's the first contact that they've had with people their own age of a different race. In New York City, street academies prepare dropouts for college. Here, black and white teachers contribute their services in facilities paid for by white business organizations and run by black administrators. Other organizations like Tribe teach trades to the dropout, the unemployed, and the underemployed with the help of private and government funds. There is no question that there are many people in business and government who are sincerely committed to overcoming the ghetto-produced education and income gap. What about adults? Recently, more and more business organizations are building their plants in ghetto areas. Not only are black people being trained for higher technical skills, but also for top management positions. In some instances, the government provides the money for these training programs. The government also provides experts to help black men go into business, and this includes guaranteeing the loan at the bank. Many private businessmen are contributing their time and services to help get these new businesses off the ground. Even the most conservative businessmen realize that it will cost less to help black men go into business than the millions spent on welfare. Besides, these businesses will be paying taxes rather than taking money on welfare or unemployment insurance. In cities all over the United States, more than 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, white people are meeting with black people in an all-out effort to wipe out hatred and misunderstanding between the races and to replace it with something more in the American theory of democracy for all.
What can I do?
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 Well, the first thing to do is to relate to each other as individuals, not as whitey, honky, coon, or nigger. Don't answer white racism with black racism, with white. It's too late in the history of this country to do that any longer. You can also share your advantages, opportunities, and better education with those that don't have them yet. You can tutor. You can teach. You can be an active part of organizations working to give an equal chance to black people to enjoy what America has to offer all its people. But equal education, equal housing, equal jobs, these will never have any real meaning unless your own personal relationships with black people are the same as they are with whites.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you know one of them niggers will be wanting to marry your sister.
All these people could not have wanted to marry your sister. And neither did he. Well, what do you say after that? How many words? How many pictures, how many lives is it going to take? A great man once said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." That's what he said. What do you say?
Well,
what'd you think?
Does it sound familiar? This was in 1969 when there were programs available for African American and people of color to help them improve. However, in the 1970s, all those particular programs were disposed of by Congress. About those particular people who were supposed to be representing black people, not other black people, but white people. And because of urban affairs in most places, budgets were constantly cut until there was no more program. Here we are 51 years later, in worse conditions than we were before. Worse. Where the same kinds of negative images are presented. The same kind of negative racism and killings unnecessarily by people representing the police departments. All these particular kinds of things put us back into a situation where Abraham Lincoln said a house divided cannot stand. And we're headed directly in that particular direction once again. It's a long time, but it's back to where it should not be, but that's where it is. Now we're going to go on. Oh, by the way, when we're listening to that show, you could tell us an old program because that's when the black people were still being called Negroes and colored people. So we're going to move on to another element for the last part of the show today. And this one is a show that took place in 1994. We've come from 1969 to 1994. However, the difference here is a black woman is talking about black people. Let's see what's happening.
And that, you know, that's why we wrote this book.
You also tell stories of black parents who are disapproving when their children or a young adult, a teenager, brings home a dark-skinned date.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not all black families. I mean, my mom isn't like that. It's just some that are like that.
You sit next to your co-author, Midge Wilson. You likewise are responsible for the color complex. You're a social psychologist from DePaul University.
Mm-hmm.
And may I say, it should be said, you're a white person.
I'm a white person.
There was a time in this country when we might have had some tribunals that would demand that you prove it. We still have it.
You get one drop in there, you never
know. And that's all it takes.
All it takes.
Ask the people who wrote the law. You believe that, first of all, this kind of prejudice exists within the black community.
That is my understanding, and it's the best way after working on this book, because
yeah.
I think a lot of whites don't realize the extent of the prejudice.
Yeah. Tell us about your own, how the scales fell from your eyes. You're an academic, and you did a lot of scholarship on this.
Well, I grew up in the South, and I heard things white people would say, like, light-skinned blacks are more intelligent. This is known as the mulatto hypothesis. And it's a very arrogant assumption on the part of whites that if they have some white blood in them, then that makes them smarter because they're more like us. Or you hear other things like dark-skinned black men are more criminally dangerous, more sexually driven. And there are all these crazy myths that exist in the white community about African-Americans on the basis of their skin color.
Right. Just to stop you for a moment now, we have the proverbial white person walking down the street at
mm-hmm.
night, and coming the other way are black men.
Right.
Now the question is, who's going to flee to the other side of the street? And in your hypothesis, if those black males are very black, the fleeing will take place with more urgency.
More rapidity. Yes, because there is a perception that the darker the skin, skin, the lower the class, the angrier. And this isn't true. There is a color class hierarchy in this country, but there's no one-on-one relationship. There's no one-on-one relationship between skin color and intelligence.
And is it your view that the but this is a very sad commentary. If we've got this kind, we have black people who are adopting the same kind of racist chemistry that has exploited them for so long by the white power structure.
It's a clear case of trickle-down discrimination, and I think African Americans have been hesitant to talk about this issue. We don't want to air our dirty laundry, but they've got to, because whites play a role in perpetuating it, and whites have to look at what they do every day to keep this issue alive.
When Spike Lee made that comment, it was Spike Lee who said that black men go for light-skinned women with longer hair. And he also made the point that a lot of people, can we see it? He also made the point that a lot of blacks become very uncomfortable because he was saying that. Let me show you here. This is school day. She's talking about her hair.
I told you to stand in the hall either. Excuse me.
That's better, Miss Thing.
You heard. It ain't even real. You wish you were here like this.
Girl, you know you weren't even born with blue eyes.
That's right. Blue contact lenses.
This is jealous, right?
Jealous.
Rachel.
I've been watching you look at Julie. You're not slick.
If that was true, he wasn't much to look at.
No, get your Benny.
Barbie doll.
Hi, yellow heifer.
Car baby.
Want to be white, chickaboo?
Well, there's the litany of dirty names to call people. Here's what, that's from School Days, a film directed by Spike Lee. Here's what he said. Whether black men admit it or not, they feel light-skinned women are more attractive than dark-skinned, and they'd rather see long hair than a short afro because that's closer to white women. That comes from being inundated with media from the time you're born that constantly fed you the white woman as the image of beauty. That's both conscious and unconscious, said Mr. Lee. But on the whole, talking to my friends and knowing men, I see that a premium is put on light-skinned sisters with long hair. All true, huh?
All true.
And it's bad because, first of all, it penalizes persons, it's arbitrary.
Right, absolutely. And not only that, but I think you're buying into, you know, the myth that somehow white is better, so therefore lighter is better. And I think that it then takes out so many other African-American women that are beautiful, whether they have short, and my feeling is that African-Americans come in, looks everything from Whoopi Goldberg to Lena Horne and all in between. And it depends on your personal preference as to what you feel is beautiful. And that's another point to be made. There are prejudices, but there are preferences.
J. Edward Giles is CEO and publisher of Image Magazine. Do you agree with Mr. Lee, with Spike Lee's observation about light-skinned women?
Absolutely.
You do?
Absolutely.
And how do you feel about that?
Well, the one problem I have here is that, first of all, this is no new phenomenon. This is not something that just took place like within the past century or past decade or so. This is something that was here from the time that we were brought here, from the time that your forefathers or your forefathers stepped into my ancestry's bedroom.
Well, we shouldn't be. We shouldn't be surprised. When you consider how your life would change if some white guy in the power, a powerful white man, could prove you had a drop of Negro blood. That certainly altered your life.
Well, Phil, it's a very interesting point because I'm not so certain that you're all black. All white.
I'm sure I'm not.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm sure I'm not.
You know. My point is that this is where this began. And what is really ugly is how it began. And that is what white America doesn't want to face. That is what black America knows. We know this. It is true, I would add, not only for African-American men, but for African-American women, too, or people of color, women of color, too, because you see an inundation now of fair weaves, you know, and I understand the issue of cosmetic changes and so forth, like, you know, that I can understand. However, when you weave in a white person's hair on your head, and you call yourself a proud black woman, we have a problem here.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
didn't weave anybody else's hair on her head. You. We have an issue. We have a problem.
You don't have a problem with cornrows, do you?
No, I don't have a problem with cornrows. If we're talking about using what is natural to you.
Yeah. You have a problem with straightening?
If you're a black person. If it is intended to change who you are, yeah.
I think if we want to talk about when it all started, we talk about before the slaves got here, a Caribbean slave owner actually was talking to a slave owner in South Carolina before he got his slaves. He said, you know, how am I going to keep these slaves in line? You know, I don't have any clue as to what we're going to do. So what he actually did was the slave owner in the Caribbean islands actually wrote him a letter back saying to him, listen, you got to start to create some kind of dissension between them. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to call the light-skinned one, bring them in the house, and the darker-skinned one's going to create some kind of friction between themselves, and that's where it all started. We're going to talk about how it started here in America.
We can oppress these people better if we can get them to fight with each other.
Right.
Absolutely. And isolate them. Before we break here, Muhammad Nasihu Ali is a writer and musician. And are you born in Ghana?
Yes, I was born in Ghana.
Uh-huh. You came to the United States in 1988. So your early life and adolescence and young manhood was in Africa.
Back home in Africa.
Uh-huh. And you came here and you said, among others, that first of all, Africans prefer to marry and date lighter-skinned Africans. Is that so?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean,
same thing. You're here to confirm what we're hearing. And it's true in Africa.
It's very true in Africa, too.
Uh-huh. You wrote an article for a publication which said blacks can be racist too, and you were
uh-huh.
merely pointing this out. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And you took a good deal of abuse for saying this out
loud. Yes, I did. I did. I got a lot of letters from people all over the country. Someone I remember called me an exotic pet for white people. You know, called me all.
You lived with a white family in a predominantly white suburb in the state of Michigan.
Michigan, yes.
And you wrote about prejudice in Africa,
mm-hmm.
which certainly does exist.
It does. I mean, that is what is killing Africa, I believe. I mean, what happened in Liberia is about blacks against blacks. It's about tribes killing tribes. And that is what is happening right now, you know, in Rwanda.
In Rwanda. Mm-hmm. Here's just one. This is number 20. Let me just, this is one letter you got. These whites would be, I assume this is from a black reader. These whites would be terrified at living in a black neighborhood, but they would invite an African student to live in their house as a kind of hypocritical show of liberalism. Subconsciously, the white family you lived with probably saw you as some exotic.
I do not believe in that at all.
This young man's point about getting the poor people to fight with each other is made in this other letter to you,
mm-hmm.
Muhammad. The hypocritical whites who invite Africans into their house also have the evil practice of advising Africans not to associate with African Americans, the usual divide and conquer play.
You see, what bothers me a lot is all blacks from Africa and here in America, we always tend to say they made us. They are dividing us so that we can fight.
Right.
And I believe that if we do believe that whites have the power to divide us, then we buy into the idea that we're inferior. I don't believe so. I don't believe anyone has the power to make me to hate you.
Let me start with Cassandra and Mimi, if we may. Huh? You don't mind? Cassandra, you were in line at a restaurant?
Yes.
And Mimi was an employee, was she not?
Correct.
Yes. And there was a law, was it like a fast food place?
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh. It was your turn to be waited on, was it?
Right.
What did she do?
She bypassed me to wait on the whites that were in line behind me. And I had a problem with that. She said it's because I took too much time to make up my mind. And
why do you think she did that, Cassandra?
Well, after even knowing her a little bit longer, I see that she has a tendency to gravitate towards whites when she makes an opinion on something. And this is since the incident. And also, she has a problem with determining colors within the workplace. She has a tendency to tell individuals that she knows she's not as dark as someone else, and her kids are not dark complexed, and she prefers to buy her children white toys, and she practically discriminates against anything that's dark complexed when she suffers.
You didn't go to court and learn this, did you?
No.
You just, after this
how is it that you're, what occasion you're talking to her about it?
Well, due to an unusual circumstance, we become employed at the same office now. And this has continued to happen because I see pictures of her daughters with white dolls, and an individual at work that's her friend gave her a black doll, and she even remarked that she didn't know if her child would play with that black doll. And
you do, Mimi, you do wait on white people first.
No, it depends. I mean, if you're standing in line, I'm working at a fast food chain, and you're still looking at the menu, then I'm going to get the next person in line.
So you're suggesting that because she was taking so long, for efficiency and to expedite the orders. You don't believe it? Well, Bullard's a pretty. What are you now? We're going to get the. You're going to get the tree and the horse and the rope, and let's go to the.
Tend to me first if I was next for line. I don't believe that anybody should be discriminated no matter how long it takes them to make a choice.
Yeah.
That's not discriminating against anyone. If you're standing in line and still looking up at the menu, then that means you're not ready.
Yes. Hang on just a second. I'll get to you in just a moment. Do you date dark skinned men?
It depends on what you call dark skinned men.
I'm dark.
I don't consider you dark.
I'm dark.
But I don't consider you dark.
But the men in her life have been lighter than you.
Yeah. Meaning, obviously here what we've got the beginnings of the sketch of a profile of a person who's not at all comfortable with your own blackness.
I'm not black. I'm brown. I'm brown. I'm not black.
All I can think of is just brainwashing. I mean, that's all I can think of. I've seen it on all levels of just being, for me, a light-skinned black person. I attend these balls, and I won't say where, but where it used to be predominantly high yellow, light skin, light bright, damn near white people, and
damn near white, as in you think you're. In other words, there's a disdain for you because of the color of your skin and a presumption that you strut because you're not as black as some African American people.
I mean, I wasn't going with that intention, but I heard one of my friend's mother. So, yes, honey, you're here to breed correctly. And, of course, all these young, light-skinned gentlemen are going to be doctors and lawyers. And I'm like, I'm not a horse. You know, like, I don't want to breed that way. You know, that brother here, he's attractive. You know, like, I really don't care. Color issue is not ideal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it comes from very nurturing of who your parents are.
Yeah.
You know, it starts with home because I had black dolls. My parents colored in our birthday cards, like, this is a black doll. You know, like, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
You have to start within, you know.
Let's just, this young woman presents just one side of this agony, and it is an agony. Man, this is a spider web that we've woven here that gets some very nice people caught up and distracted. Paul Parker, you'll be telling us in a moment about, first of all, you support what's been said here. Light-skinned blacks have always been favored by whites. Let me tell you that one case in point here happens to be seated at your left. She's Donna Stewart. Ms. Stewart, you are the admissions counsel for the University of Colorado at Boulder.
Yeah.
So good old Boulder decides, by God, this is the 20th century, and we've got to do something about minority enrollment, et cetera, and very conscientiously ensures that there's a woman of color in the admissions office.
Certainly not the only one. I was added to a team of counselors.
All right. But in any event, it was a very well-motivated thing that the University of Colorado Boulder was doing.
I'd like to hope so, yeah.
Yes. And you had a prospective student's mother say what?
Well, at admissions programs, we always have parents that volunteer to come and assist with the program and say, this is what the university is all about. This is what I do as a parent for the university. And evidently, a parent, without approaching me, without asking me where I stood on issues for people of color,
yes,
went to the chancellor and wrote a letter petitioning the removal my removal from the position, saying I want justification for why you hired her, and later on she applied for my position.
Was this a woman of color?
Yes, it was.
But tell them what her grievance was.
She didn't feel that I represented black issues, which...
But it was because of your lightness, was it not?
I suspect so.
So
yes, it was.
You're not light enough, or you're not dark enough to be recruiting minority students for the University of Colorado Boulder. Is this not what you believe to be this woman's point?
Absolutely. But what people don't understand is that even though I am considered high yellow in the black community, I get it from both ends. And that's
well, that's clear. If you're light, you're disdained by other people of your race, or some of them.
Yes, and teachers, we need to be honest and say that teachers, most of whom in America happen to be white, at least where I have been, are very careful about whom they make as their pets, whom they send to the office, and they always choose the lighter child.
And, I'd like to make it clear as well, that number one, that there is not no black on black racism. What there is black on black confusion.
I disagree.
By white on black racism, but kind of on the point of the brother made here earlier, the individual you're talking about, the slave owner from the Caribbean, is Willie Lynch. And more or less his perspective was that, look, he told the other slave masters that in order to keep your slaves in check, you have to more or less, with the divide and conquer aspect, pit one, the brother, one light skinned black against the dark skinned black. You got the house Negroes, you got the steel Negroes. You always said the light skinned black. Like, look, you're better than the rest of the black. Yeah. You know, you got better things going. You look like me. You're closer. The ones that are dark skinned are the ones that actually aren't the ones that are good. Yeah. I know you now.
Lots of folks want in here.
To me, the tragedy is there's no way to win. If you're black and in a major corporation, do I understand that your strategy was not to talk to other black people?
Absolutely.
You talked to other black people?
There was no way. There was, at the time when I had lost my identity and I had lost perspective of who I was, okay, when I bought into what you wanted me to buy into,
you said me.
Let me take. Well,
go ahead. Don't be distracted. Okay. Make your point. Lots of folks want in here. Make your point, please. I respect it.
At the time when I did that, I believe that if I were to communicate with my brothers and sisters,
like
I would not be able to make it further.
You're like the water cooler or the Xerox machine or the lunchroom?
Because you, whoever you are, I mean, if
you're looking at you as you're one of a number of.
I say, yeah, absolutely. White America would look and say, you know what? Okay, he's not going to, you know. I saw Jay
so
over there by
so
the water cooler
so
with the homies, you know what I'm saying?
So when you start talking to the white folks, the brothers are going to accuse you of sucking up.
Absolutely.
You can't win.
The question is, who do you owe your allegiance? And I owe my allegiance to my family. Okay, these are my family here.
Black's torn from the Boston Globe. This is a very, very well-written article from...
You're going to have to stop right there. By the way, this is Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean. And you've been listening to a presentation that was done in 1994, Blacks Against Blacks Prejudice. And that's a very interesting dichotomy of what you might find that was going on back in the 1980s to the end of the 1990s. And in some cases, you might still find it going on today. It all depends on how children were brought up and how they were taught at home about different values. But the concept of black persons versus light-skinned black people, which are both black, didn't start yesterday. It started all the way back into slavery when you had the house black persons and you had the dark-skinned field persons. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean, and hopefully you'll listen to our show on Friday at 4:30. And we will continue with helping you receive and knowledge about different kinds of things that are causing us to have divisions in our society, in race relations and otherwise. Thank you for listening. Hope to hear from you or see have you listen again. Bye-bye.